All right, welcome back to the Fitz News Studios for another edition of Your Week in Review. I am Will Folks, founding editor of FitzNews.com and your host for this show. We're starting off this week with Unsolved Carolinas, our feature on cases that have fallen off the front pages but remain incredibly important to the loved ones of those who they revolve around. In this story, we're going to talk about the unsolved death of Jeff Hammond, a very wealthy individual from Beaufort County, South Carolina. Case that remains unsolved. Our Callie Lyons has done a deep dive into the story, and folks, you are not going to want to miss what she's found. Just an incredible story. After that, I'm sitting down with Andy Fancher. You know Andy from exposing cops and law enforcement officers that step out of line, but today he's standing up for a law enforcement officer who was pressured by a corrupt politician. What happened? We're going to walk you through that story with Andy Fancher. Last but not least, congressional drama in South Carolina's Lowcountry. The arrest of the child of one of the candidates has thrown that race into disarray. I'm going to walk you through what happened and what I believe the candidate involved should do as a result of it. All of that and more heading your way on The Week in Review. So if you follow our media outlet, obviously you know who I am. You know who Jen Wood is. You know who Dylan Nolan is. And obviously Andy Fancher, the newest member of our team, absolutely crushing it. But there's a member of our team that you may not see as often on the show. There's a member of our team you may not see as often in bylines, but she has been an absolutely indispensable member of the Fitz News squad, Callie Lyons. She's been covering a ton of true crime. She's been covering a ton of our court stories. But this week, as part of our Unsolved Carolina series, Callie did one of the deepest dives that we have ever done at this media outlet. I'm talking about voluminous research, detailed, in-depth background reporting, interviews, studying case files, sending FOIAs, the whole nine yards. And it all revolves around a mysterious death that took place in Beaufort County, South Carolina, back in 2017. It involved a man of means, Jeff Hammond, a respected businessman, CEO of a huge company worth nine figures. It involved mysterious circumstances of his passing, an autopsy that was incomplete to say the least, a police report that left more questions than answers, and most importantly, evidence that appears to have been overlooked or missed altogether. Callie dug into this story in an incredibly personal, incredibly compelling way, not only telling the story of who Jeff Hammond was, but who were the people around him, and could some of them potentially have had a motive for murder? Now, there was a huge investigation that was done into this case. Unfortunately, it wasn't done by law enforcement. It was done by a private investigator, Joseph Dalu. His report is featured prominently in Callie Lyons' exhaustive analysis of this case. Now, we just dropped this story on Fitz News, but here you're going to see on the Week in Review an excerpt from the video package that accompanied that story. Led by Callie Lyons, here's the story of the death of Jeff Hammond.
Jeff's wife, Jane Hammond, told police she was the only other person at the Hanover Way address that late spring day when her husband was said to have collapsed and died. Calling 911, Jane said her husband was on the floor and that she was not able to roll him over to administer cardiopulmonary resuscitation. When asked, Jane said she was not able to tell if her husband was breathing or if he had a pulse. Those comments seemed strange coming from someone whose biography on CSI's corporate website touted her experience as a registered nurse who graduated from UCLA.
Now, one is your emergency.
My husband's on the floor.
What's the address?
12 Hanover Way in Colleton River.
Okay, and that was 12 Hanover Way. And is he breathing?
I can't tell.
Okay, how old is your husband, ma'am?
69.
Did he have any medical problems?
No.
As emergency personnel arrived 6 minutes later, they were greeted by the security chief from Colleton River Club, who guided first responders to Jeff's location on the third floor. Despite attempts by the Bluffton Fire Department and Beaufort County EMS to resuscitate Jeff, his heart had stopped. He was pronounced dead. The Beaufort County Sheriff's Office also responded to the scene, as did the deputy coroner. No one took photographs of the death scene, and reports vary as to the details. The fire department report mentions an unintentional injury without further explanation. The EMS report said Jeff had cyanosis, or a bluish coloring of the skin linked to oxygen deprivation, from his clavicles to his head. A death scene questionnaire filled out by responding deputies said blood was coming from his nose. The deputy coroner noted inconsistencies in Jane's comments. Jane told the deputy coroner that Jeff had gone up to his third floor office to crunch numbers. The former military man was a creature of habit. He rose early, dressed, and had coffee and breakfast every day. But he was found in the shorts he wore to bed, in an office that was clean and undisturbed. There was no evidence of him working on anything. The coroner requested an autopsy. On the certificate of death dated 2 days later, the cause was listed as pending toxicology and autopsy results, while the manner of death was cited as pending investigation. As for the sheriff's office, it closed its investigation the day after Jeff died, without reviewing the results of the autopsy. Investigators were not the only ones moving quickly. By 5:38 p.m. on June the 15th, 2017, Jeff's memorial card had already been printed.
So what is it that you think happened to cause the death of Jeffrey Hammond?
I think that he was probably prepared to ask for a divorce, maybe something he probably contemplated on for a year, and in the last 6 months was getting right down to it. There was some information that he was looking at seeking an attorney for what, I don't know. I think that she caught wind of it. And with people like Jane and everything that she displayed up based on our findings, she liked control. She liked the upper echelon, the fact that she was very wealthy. And in fact, if you just listen to the 911 call, it appears in one of the most traumatic experiences you could have in your life, she's more concerned that the dispatcher asked her if it was a residence or a mobile home. And her reply was, no, it's a house. Now, one could look at that and say that maybe she took that as, don't you know what the area is that you dispatch? Or, I'm offended you would think that I would live in a mobile home. And based on everything else, I'm going to lean towards the mobile home perception. But I think she caught wind of that, and he went to sleep, they went to bed, and he either died of asphyxiation, suffocation, by a pillow over his head. There may have been a struggle based on him trying to grasp the bruising on her wrists. And I think when the struggle was getting too much, she another party was there, or she took a blunt instrument and struck him on the head. Or maybe she did that first, and then that didn't do it, so she continued on with suffocation, because there's evidence of that based on just the autopsy and the description of their findings, right? And so that's something you can't ignore. And I do think there was another person involved, because I don't think that, number one, Jane would have risked doing it herself in fear that she could be overpowered. So either she drugged him in some way the evening before over a period of time, and that wasn't working. There's some speculation on that based on evidence. Or there was someone else there, because in the 911 tape, you can clearly hear what appears to be a male voice in the background. After law enforcement confirmed, we confirmed that there was no male dispatcher in the room on duty at the time of the 911 call. And with our experts, we found that that particular voice was definitely coming on the side of the caller. So, you know, other screaming evidence, no matter what, they didn't even follow up on. And if you're going to use the excuse that he didn't, it was out of his jurisdiction, because that was one of the things that I looked at of Boca, it's the motive. You follow the evidence. You don't stop evidence when it gets to the state line or county line. you follow the evidence to confirm it, because that's the whole package. The murder happened there, or unexpected death that has extremely suspicious circumstances, you're not going to stop and just go, well, sorry, it's in the next city over. That's somebody else's case. I'm not going to go there. No. People don't all live in the same city they kill.
Now, obviously, that is just an excerpt from this lengthy half-hour, basically, documentary on the death of Jeff Hammond. You want to watch the whole thing? Right there, right on our YouTube channel. You can check it out. Amazing work by our entire team, but most of all, again, cannot thank her enough, Callie Lyons, for the incredible work that she did on this story. If you've got a similar case that you want us to look into, a case where you believe law enforcement or other investigators failed to pursue the right leads or ask the right questions or chase the right suspects, let us know. We will dig into the files and follow them as far as we can take them. Now, count on Fitz News not to drop this story. We're going to stay on it. In fact, we're going to hear from Callie herself in the upcoming month in review, which again, just a few days away here on Fitz News. Keep it tuned for more information as we launch our second installment of that new format, the month in review, focusing in part on the death of Jeffrey Hammond. Right, so since he joined the Fitz News team last fall, our Andy Fancher has been focused extensively on badges gone bad or cops that step out of line. But in this segment, we're going to talk about a cop who stood up for himself against political pressure applied by a public official who, based on the recordings we've captured, appears very clearly to have committed misconduct in office. We're talking about the town of Hunniapath, South Carolina. Andy, did I say that right? I've lived here my whole life. I don't know how to say this town. How do you say it?
Well, yeah, according to the officer, it's Honia? Hunniapath? But admittedly, when I was talking to all of the town officials, I just said the word real fast and hoped that they wouldn't stop me in the event I was saying it incorrectly. Okay. But I think if that's the one thing we're hung up on, we're doing all right here.
Well, everything else about this story is 100% nailed down. Obviously, it helps with video evidence. Andy, walk us through what happened here. What exactly are the circumstances which led to this report involving the councilwoman?
According to the former officer, which is the only person who has any testimony to this, as the incident report has vanished and there is no body camera footage, according to Chief Miller, which we'll talk about in a moment, it was a service call, a disturbance call, that was placed 2 years ago, in 2022, in which Dorothy Dot Evans, four-term town councilwoman, was attempting to evict one of her tenants without having filed any eviction paperwork, doing anything necessary to evict said tenant. And when officers arrived, they noted that the tenant was attempting to get medication from inside and that Miss Evans was withholding her from retrieving that medication, something to the effect of, quote, she'll need a claim and delivery if she ever wants to see her prescription again.
Oh, my God. Making her go through the courts to get her medicine, basically.
Correct, correct. Even though there was no legal standing at all prohibiting her from getting that medicine or entering the residence that was rightfully hers. And according to the public index, there has still been no eviction notice filed at this property.
God, it's pretty hardcore. She must have wanted this tenant out pretty badly. Let's before we play this clip, Andy, set us up exactly what's happening in this clip we're about to watch.
You know, I had to put out an Idiocracy alert on this one. What occurred leading up to this clip, according to the officers, he was informing the councilwoman of the tenant's residential rights, saying that there was no need for magistrate court intervention and that she could go get her prescription, to which Miss Evans clapped back and touted her authority.
Let's take a look at this clip.
She's coming to get her stuff.
You don't want me to have to get shown down here.
Ma'am, I get threatened to have my boss come down here all the time. That doesn't scare me. You threaten me with it, it's not going to do anything.
I pay your salary.
You don't pay my salary, ma'am. You don't pay my salary.
I save my money.
Okay. Do you? What are you going to do? Stop paying me? Is that it?
No.
Okay. Yeah. That's an empty threat, ma'am.
All right. So, Andy, she's saying, I pay your salary. What the heck?
I mean, technically, she sits on the council that approves the annual budget for the Hunniapath Police Department. But what we have here, more than just an irate councilwoman, is a councilwoman committing a crime on camera. an offense that, if convicted, could carry a $1,000 fine or a year in prison.
Yeah, you're not allowed to use your position of public influence
to abuse your position.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Now, you started digging into this, though. And again, I'm impressed. I was listening to some of the recordings, some of these interviews. You started questioning leadership in the town, the mayor. Mm-hmm. Walk us through the response you got when you started digging on this abuse of power.
Well, see, what I did not want to happen here was another Lawrence County. I wanted to give our public officials every chance to do the right thing, which is why I gave them upwards of 3 weeks to do so much as anything at all to, again, avoid having a carbon copy of Lawrence County. But what we have here are our public officials, unfortunately, lying to my face, from their mouths
Walk
to my ears.
That. We'll give us an
sure.
example.
Sure. Well, I guess we can't say that Dorothy Dot Evans lied, although she said she'd be available in 10 minutes, and that was 3 weeks ago. I've called her back several times since then, left her voicemails, texted her. She has gone quiet.
Now, we got that tape. Hold on. Let's real quick play that tape. Here's the 10. She's going to call you back in 10 minutes. Let's take a listen.
Right.
And for that, I was just curious if you had a moment to I don't know, address what some of the folks are saying.
Okay, can you hold just a moment? I mean, can you call me back in about 10 minutes?
Yeah, that works.
Okay, all right, bye-bye.
All right, bye. Okay.
Andy, obviously you ain't got a call back.
No.
No call back.
No, or answer, just voicemails.
Shocker, right? Shocker.
You know, I wish I could say I was shocked, and that seems to be the general consensus out in Oneopath, too, is that, well, we wish we could say we're surprised. So the day after that, I get connected with their new police chief, which is a proponent. This man, Chief Miller, is a proponent for transparency, or so I thought. It's worth noting, this is the fourth police chief in Oneopath since the new mayor was elected. You know, is that
Over
an indication of some issues?
Like, how long is that?
That's 2019 to now. We've gone through four police chiefs. Yes. So I connected with him, and admittedly, at that time, I did not have the body camera video. Mm-hmm. He prefaced that he would look for the video, he would look for the incident reports, but that HPPD had some major issues with record keeping prior to his chiefship. Hmm. So that's how he prefaced this. And, you know, he said he would get back with me. So I waited, called him back. To his credit, he answered every single one of my calls. This was a very responsive chief. Up until the point I got the body camera video.
Things took a turn then.
Things took a turn because he told me that the body camera video was gone. You see, they're using Axon body cameras. Back then they were using WatchGuard, even though WatchGuard videos are stored in the WatchGuard cloud. It was gone, all right, as well as the incident report. Well, evidently somebody in Oneopath heard that I was asking around for the body camera video, because after he told me it was non-existent, I was
turned
provided
up.
It. Just miraculously turned up.
So once you confront him with that footage, radio
so
silence.
I called him and I told him that, hey, I have the video. And you could tell he was a little taken back.
Mm-hmm.
And to his credit, he said, well, I'm glad you got the video.
Right.
And
thrilled. Beyond
thrilled
words.
Thrilled that you got the video. And right, he has not answered a single one of my calls since then.
Wow.
Last I heard from him, he texted and said that he would call me once lunch cleared up.
Mm.
Interesting that we're having lunch at 2:30, but that was what he texted me last.
You also went to the mayor. You went straight to the top trying to figure out exactly what's going on. Walk us through.
Of course. So yet another lie. I did not know at the time that I had called the mayor that the mayor was actually notified of this incident the day after it happened.
Oh, my gosh.
So what the mayor tells me is that he was not abreast on the issue, had never heard of it happening. And to add insult to injury here, I read off the transcript from this incident.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I pay you. Yes, I pay your salary. I say how much you make a month. I read off the entire transcript to this man. And his response, well, here, we'll play his response.
So, you know, you don't want to see a public servant saying that to a police officer, you know?
Sure.
But,
Was that the gist of it? Was that all of it?
Did you say, dude, yes, that's the gist of it. That is the gist of
it. Yeah, that's the gist of it, is we've got your councilwoman committing a crime. And then come to find out, after I get off the phone with you, Mayor, that you were notified of it by the police chief the morning after it happened? Shame on the mayor. Shame on town council.
So we got CYA from the mayor, CYA from the police chief. For what? I mean, was this woman this powerful? Is she that influential in Honeyapath? Pull this kind of weight?
According to the residents out in Honeyapath, which is what, a town of approximately 4,000 people?
Yeah. Up in Abbeville County. Yeah,
yeah, this is commonplace. This is commonplace for the town. Just smoke mirrors, lies, corruption. Now, an interesting thing happened after we put out that report, because we now have some folks reaching out.
Excellent.
You know, it appears as though we have pushed a gust of wind through the House of Cards, right? And while they're still standing, they might not be for much longer. In fact, it's worth noting that at the very end of the article, we have the officer, anonymous officer, saying that he's just getting started. What else does he have in store?
Ooh.
Can't wait. But an interesting thing happened. An anonymous source was at the rec center within the afternoon we released our article. And he overheard an interesting conversation from a public servant out there. I'm going to read it off here.
Yeah.
Quote, he seemed animated, and I clearly heard whoever he was talking to say that, quote, yeah, SLED made a bunch of us take a lie detector test.
Oh, wow. Because I was just going to ask, I mean, this is a textbook misconduct in office allegation, one that SLED should have been called a long time ago to investigate. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the kind of thing you said the mayor found out the next day. That letter should have gone out to SLED that day.
Correct.
Calling for an investigation.
Instead, absolutely nothing happened.
Andy, I tell you what, man, you have done amazing work on this story. Also, the story I want to ask you about, we talked about this last week in the show.
Mm-hmm.
You were going down to Jasper County, South Carolina, to dig in on the big story down there, the woman that was found on the boat ramp there in Jasper, badly beaten. Arrests have been made. Andy, walk us through the very latest on that case.
Sure. So we do have three arrests that were announced by SLED earlier this week. We've got two females and one male, all approximately 30 to 32 years old. And what we found so interesting is that once you turn to their social media pages, the male involved, which some have labeled the mastermind of what we later found out was a kidnapping from Barnwell County, where three individuals purportedly truck this woman approximately 74 miles in broad daylight and leave her for dead at the Jasper County boat landing. So what we have since learned is that, at least according to one of the suspects, they're a member of the Blood Street Gang, but not just any set, the G-Shine set specifically. That is according to his Facebook statuses. That's according to his own frickin' name on Facebook, Jamal G-Shine O'Reilly. So we've got some pretty damning status updates here, advocating for mo murder, mo homicide, and that you'll never catch him slacking. So I'm curious to see how that'll hold up. Last time I checked with SLED, as of yesterday, the two of the three suspects remain out of state awaiting extradition. And yeah, this story is far from over. I anticipate many more updates very soon. I mean, hell, two of the three suspects haven't even been served their arrest warrants yet.
And SLED obviously still continuing to lead that investigation. You were the first to report that they were taking the reins of that that inquiry. Andy, excellent work. Folks, remember, if you've got a tip like this, if law enforcement, if politicians in your municipality are trying to get around the law to trying to violate your rights using their influence, abusing their influence, as Andy just said, let us know. We will investigate it. We will hold them accountable. Andy, you've done amazing work on this, not only holding the law enforcement profession accountable when its individual officers step out of line, but in this case, sticking up for them when their lawful activities are improperly influenced by a corrupt public official.
One thing I'd like to add, though, before we suspend this segment here is that some folks on Facebook were alleging that this Dot Evans report was racially motivated. So I did want to address that respectfully, right? For anybody considering reaching out to our outlet or me personally, I want to make it abundantly clear that I don't give a shit your denomination, your politics, your color, or whatever rank you hold in the gang that you and I just paid our dues to on the 15th. When you are failing to abide by the rules that you set for you and me, and it therefore costs us money, that's when I take it personally. And that's when I encourage people to reach out.
Well, Andy, one thing we've proven over the years, Fitz News is an equal opportunity nut crusher. So I'm glad to see you share the same philosophy we do. Yeah, we don't care who you are, what your rank is, what other condition may define you in the public eye. If you cross the line, we're going to call balls and strikes no matter who you are. So I'm the father of 7 kids. In fact, by the time you watch this, it may be 8 kids. My wife is literally about to pop with our 8th child, but I know what it means to hurt for a child. I know what it means to worry about a child. I know what it means to struggle with decisions involving parenting. It's literally the hardest job there is to do. So I understand what South Carolina 1st Congressional District candidate Catherine Templeton is going through. In case you haven't been read into this story, earlier this week we exclusively reported that Templeton's 18-year-old son had been charged with felony first-degree assault and battery related to an assault that literally left the victim hospitalized, suffering from multiple seizures. This was a serious attack, but why did we print it? Why did we cover what her campaign, the Templeton campaign, refers to as a high school fight? Why is that relevant? Well, I'll tell you why it's relevant. It's because we made an editorial decision based on information collected during an investigation that we were already conducting on Templeton's son. Because apparently, according to sources familiar with this young man, this isn't the first time he's used fists to solve a dispute. This isn't the first time he's resorted to violence. In fact, we reported that there was a prior arrest involving pointing and presenting an alleged firearm. Now, that arrest has been expunged. The charge was dismissed, so we don't have all the details of that incident. But we have heard from our sources in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, that this young man is, quote, off the rails. While I'm not going to get into the specific allegations that we've been investigating, I will say a few things about them. They are very credible. They are very concerning. And it was based in no small part on those allegations that once this arrest was recorded, once this arrest was made known, we made the editorial decision to publish for one reason and one reason only. I believed it to be in the best interest of public safety. I go way back with Catherine Templeton. She was a 2-time director in the cabinet of former Governor Nikki Haley. She did an amazing job. She was a great cabinet director by all accounts. She then campaigned for governor in 2018 as a conservative Republican. I was very supportive of her candidacy at the time. She campaigned on a lot of good things. But this congressional race that she's entered into is a bit of a different story. And I want to start out by saying that the candidate that she's running against, Nancy Mace, she's a second-term incumbent. She knocked off Democrat Joe Cunningham back in 2018 and then was challenged by Donald Trump, a handpicked candidate by Donald Trump in 2020, beat the Trump-backed challenger to win a second term. But she's been the kind of Republican that, again, to me anyway, if you believe in freedom, if you believe in free markets, things that Republicans say they believe in, Nancy Mace has been someone who's voted very consistently on those things. Now, the problem is that she's called out a lot of the Republicans in Washington, D.C. who haven't. And in fact, she was one of only a handful of Republicans who voted to oust the former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Obviously, this made Kevin McCarthy very upset. And so he has vowed retribution against Mace. A lot of money has been freed up to challenge her. And Catherine Templeton is basically the result of the D.C. swamp's effort to oust Nancy Mace. Now, here's my point on that. This really isn't Catherine Templeton's fight. This is a fight from the D.C. swamp trying to take out a rogue congresswoman, someone they believe has not been sufficiently loyal to the GOP establishment in Washington, D.C. So the question I posed this week, and the question I'll pose now as it relates to this, if you have a child who, again, is clearly maybe not a menace yet, but clearly a danger to society. Repeat instances of violence, allegations of drug abuse. Why would you continue a race like this, knowing all this is going to come out, number one, but more importantly, knowing that you are, at least in some manner, derelict in your duty as a parent? Now, again, I don't know what's happening behind closed doors at the Templeton household. I do know from sources who are close to Templeton that this has been agonizing for her, that she's been in anguish over how to handle this. Who wouldn't be? I completely get that. Again, as a dad, I completely get that. But isn't that a sign, Ms. Templeton, that you need to drop out of this race and focus on the family? This is your son. And again, this is going to be a much bigger problem if there's no accountability. And ultimately, that is why we made the decision to break that story earlier this week, accountability. Because if none is present, if there is no responsibility imposed on this situation, then this young man is going to continue to do the things that he's done, going to continue down this path. And again, that is why we stepped in. That is why the mainstream media has now jumped on this story, reporting additional details. That's why we could continue to push for the records, the investigatory records of this case, and most important, while we will continue to call on Catherine Templeton to do the right thing by her family and drop out of that race for South Carolina's 1st Congressional District. All right, that's a wrap for this week's edition of the show. Big thanks to our Callie Lyons and Andy Fancher for coming on. Great work on those stories that they've done. A ton of stories, though, broke on Fitz News this week. We didn't have a chance to get into all of them, but if you didn't visit the site this week, be sure to check it out. We had a huge story on the identity of the Russian hacker who was behind the 2012 data breach of the South Carolina Department of Revenue, one of the biggest hacks of a government entity in American history. They now know who did it. Folks, that story broke on Krebs on Security. We were the first site here in South Carolina to report on the identity of that hacker. Big story on Fitz News. We also had a major update on the Rose Petal murder. This is one of the cases that we've been following from the very beginning up in Greenville, South Carolina. The first case related to the Rose Petal murder went to trial in Greenville this week. We got all the details on Fitz News. So if you haven't checked out that report, be sure to go to Fitz News again. Your support empowers everything we do on all these stories. So thank you again. If you haven't already, like us, subscribe us, but most importantly, go to fitznews.com and subscribe to our website again to help empower all the investigative work that we're doing to hold those in power accountable to you.